Greetings. I'm Bill Kladke and I'd like to welcome you to today's edition of Living in Baltimore. Our guest today is Keith Murky, who is Education and Outreach Associate with the Maryland Commission on Civil Rights. And Keith is here today to talk to us about employment discrimination and housing discrimination and what we can do to protect ourselves and to do what happens if it happens to us and we can do something about it. So, Keith, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much for coming. It's been a while since you've been on the show.
Right, right.
6-8 months, and unfortunately or fortunately or however you want to look at it, there's always something going on in discrimination.
Right,
in
right.
Maryland.
Definitely.
So I'm very glad you could come today.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
First of all, for those of our listeners who are unfamiliar with the commission, could you please tell us something about commission, please?
Sure. Our commission, the Commission on Civil Rights, is the agency that enforces Title 20 of our state law, which is the anti-discrimination code for the state. And so we do that in housing, employment, and any public service or accommodation that's available in the state. So that would be buildings, sidewalks, everything that is open to the public, as well as services or anything like that. So if someone is treated differently based on one of our protected categories, you could file a complaint with us and we would investigate it.
Great. And of course, you do everything for free because you're a public service.
Right, right. So we receive complaints free. There's no charge to a person. Even our educational services are free to the public. So we do. We come out to your workplace to do presentations. Mm-hmm. We will do it for conferences. We don't charge any fee for our services whatsoever. And so we're always looking for new places to go. If you have festivals or fairs that we might be able to set up to pass our information out, we'd love to do that. So you can always contact me at the commission for that.
Wonderful. And how can they do that?
You can always give me a call directly at 410-767-8560, which is my direct line. Or you can email me at keith.murky, and that's M-E-R-K-E-Y, at maryland.gov. And that'll come directly to my email.
Great. Great. And The website for the commission?
The website for the commission is www.mccr.maryland.gov.
Wonderful.
All those dots.
Yeah, lots of dots, but it's a wonderful website, too. There's lots of information on it.
And you can download you can download our brochures. You can download our posters. Yeah. You can see what the classes that we teach and kind of like a synopsis of those. Just contact us through the website. We'll be glad to work with you as best we can.
Great. Thanks. What's your background and work with the commission?
Well, it's interesting. I've been there going on 18 years.
Wow.
So it's a long time. So
you know where the bones are buried.
Yeah, I know where some of them are, but that's okay. but it's really interesting that I started my career as a minister. And from there, I moved and I did a lot of education and training in that. And so mm-hmm. I've worked in different mm-hmm. areas, you know, health education, persons with mental illness. I worked in education and that. And then on to the commission, where I do a lot of training on things like diversity, conflict resolution. We do sexual harassment. We do sexual orientation, gender identity for the new laws and all of that. So mm-hmm. we do a lot of different kind of trainings. And I love what I do. And I've always enjoyed that. And so this has been a good fit for the way I think, as well as what I feel my talents are. And I love to see people get it, and I love to be able to pass information on to people that can help them.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. It sounds like you're an ideal person to do it. It's really your ministry.
Yeah, it is. I really do enjoy doing this, and it's something that you can see where the information can help people. One, maybe deal with some issues, but it also may help them. It gives them a little bit more education on how to work with people, how to live next to people, how to be a better neighbor, as well as being a better coworker with people.
Yeah, and I got to tell you from working with you over the years that you can communicate to anybody.
Well, I like people.
You really can do that.
Really, and I like people. I like a wide variety of people. And so it's always kind of interesting to see the dynamics.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about employment discrimination.
Okay.
What is it?
Well, employment discrimination is whenever someone is treated differently from the very beginning, from how jobs are advertised mm-hmm. to the interview process, through benefits at the office, to when you're let go, whether you're let go because you want to be let go or they fire you. So we cover the entire gamut of your employment history. So it could be people asking incorrect interview questions that will lead them to isolate people. For example, asking women, do you plan to have children, is one of those ways that we treat women differently than men. Because we don't tend to ask men that question.
Right.
It could be asking your religion. It could be asking any variety of questions about your health history that an employer should not have the right to ask that.
Mm-hmm.
We do see some interesting trends because over the years, you see which groups we see higher cases in other groups.
Right.
Initially, our higher cases were always race. And for the first time last year, it wasn't race. It was retaliation.
Really?
Meaning that's when you file a complaint and someone retaliates against you for filing a complaint, which you're granted by law from your federal, state, and local agencies.
Right.
So if someone is punishing you for doing something you have legal right to do, that is retaliation. So we see a high EEOC and the federal government has seen retaliation as their top for the last several years.
Wow.
So there's an initial complaint, then there's a retaliation. And retaliation can occur for people who've witnessed it. So they're a witness for the person that was filing a complaint.
Wow.
And then they're fired. We've had places that, to get rid of the problem, they fired everybody involved. They fired the person that was accused of it, the person that brought the accusation, and any witness. They fired them all. And all of them have retaliation complaints.
And all of them will win.
Right, because retaliation is much easier to prove sometimes than discrimination.
How can you prove it?
Well, it's really interesting. Someone does something and immediately something happens to them. So if you file a complaint and 2 weeks later you're fired.
Yeah.
Now, if it's over 6 or 7 months, it may be a little more difficult, but we've got to see that causal connection. But when it's like almost immediate, or you know, things start to happen to you, like you're isolated, they send you to another site to work.
Yeah, that's more inconvenient.
It becomes more inconvenient,
or
any of that stuff. So we start to see, like, wait a minute, if you filed a complaint and they did nothing, there's no retaliation. But when you start to say you filed and then these things started to happen, you need to amend your complaint to us.
Yeah.
You know, so we can attach that to it. And so retaliation now has been our highest, followed by race. And then flip-flopping, it's always done this, is disability and gender. So it's flip-flop. Those two have always flip-flopped for a while on our top classes.
Could you give us an example of a recent disability discrimination case?
I'm trying to think one that I can actually talk about. So in employment, it might be an accommodation, like someone asking for, they're in a wheelchair, for example, and they're in an office job, and they come in and the desk is a little too low for their chair to go under. Now, sometimes we've had people ask for a very expensive desk. Like, I did my research and this desk is $2,000.
Yeah.
And so that's not what the law requires. You need to make it easier. So it might be that you lift the old desk up on four bricks. And
pretty
it raises it up.
Pretty easy.
But there are people who say, like, no, I'm sorry, we can't do that. The new standing desks, you know, that people have, if they have difficult with their backs and stuff, that is an easy accommodation to do, and it's not that expensive. So sometimes it's when people are hesitant or just say outright, no, we're not going to provide an accommodation, that's very quickly, easily seen with disabilities. Persons who have visual and they really need some kind of screen enhancement or something with their computer. Once again, simple things you can get done. And we can even tell you what are some of the kind of places you can find those things.
Right.
So those are really kind of physical stuff. Sometimes it's in our policy. It's in their policies and procedures, allowing people to work in a different place that is more conducive if they have an attention deficit. Putting them in places that are a little bit quieter, the ability to shut their door, all of that. So it keeps the distractions down. So those are, we work with people to try to figure out sometimes some of those.
So we're talking about really almost minor common sense kind of ways of just adjusting for somebody being a little bit different.
That has a little issue.
Yeah,
with
I
some
mean,
things.
I guess the key word there is well, there are two key words. Reasonable,
right,
as you said, means not too expensive,
right,
and something that makes sense,
right,
makes sense.
Right.
To, you know, the average person.
I would
person.
Say put yourself in that place. Put yourself, could you get in there?
Yeah.
Could you get in the bathroom?
Yeah.
You know, if you were, and the reality is about 40 to maybe 50% of Americans have some form of disability.
Right.
Whether that's through age, whether that's through illness, whether that's through birth, whatever, genetics.
Yeah.
But the other half know somebody with a disability or have it in their family. So when you're saying, oh, we don't need to do that, you could clearly say, I am not going to worry about it if it happens to me, because you can be disabled in a minute.
Right.
In an accident with an illness, you can become disabled very, very quickly. And all of a sudden, the places you loved going, you can't get in anymore. Or the right. where you worked, you can't do that job anymore.
Right. And it's not fair that you now, it's just solely because of you being sick.
Right.
Or having an accident, which can happen to anybody.
That's correct.
In most cases, is not our fault.
No. And so it's having that discussion. Mm. So in employment, it'll be like accommodations for work. It might be access to the building. Sometimes our buildings were not built when they were built. If they're older, they weren't built in that thinking, because they didn't think people with disabilities worked.
Yeah, like the old courthouses with a lot of steps up.
Oh yes, like downtown.
I guess the same kind of reasonable thing applies to housing discrimination.
Right,
too.
Right. So for things like buildings that were built, you know, before 74 and things like that, is like they need to be accessible. So common areas have to be accessible. Parking lots have to have spaces for persons with disabilities that are accessible. We're not saying the entire parking lot needs to be disability access.
Right.
But there's sometimes limits. You're only required to have so many per building or per size. But the other thing is that all parking spaces can't be close.
Right.
There's some that are going to be more distance, but having them, you know, painted widely, make sure there's signage and making sure people don't abuse that signage, like people parking there that shouldn't be parking there.
Yeah.
But we also look at it a case by case. If we have someone that really needs to park closer to the door because some physical injury that causes them extreme pain as they walk, then we could work that out. We could say there are ways you can accommodate that. So even with housing, it could be like when you say, is there any way that I can have the doors widen to my apartment? Now, you may pay for that, but they can't stop you from doing it.
Right.
Putting in grab rails in bathrooms, lowering cabinets for people with wheelchairs. Service animals.
Those are reasonable.
Right. Service animals. If you require a service animal from a medical professional, then that is something that you need to allow. You can't have a no pet policy and say that means every animal, because you're going to run in risk of both the ADA as well as our laws.
Right. Right. Could you give us a couple of other examples of housing discrimination?
So accommodations, one, it may also just be, it could be the access, it could be in policies and procedures where you don't give out keys to a specific group's, even though it would make it easier for them to get out of the building, in the back of the building versus coming all the way to the front of the building. Mm. It could be if you're in a condo association, if you have minutes. Mm-hmm. Either making it available online or making sure that they're in larger print for people who have reading disabilities or, you know, sight disabilities. So those are the kind of things we start seeing in housing. And and same thing with ramps, making sure ramps are in place. If someone's purchasing a house, you know, that's a little different than renting.
Right.
So, but a lot of ours we see in access to buildings, access to accommodations. Those are the two major things we see when it comes to housing.
Because we're really talking just common sense and in most cases, not expensive
right.
things that, I mean, once they get beyond a certain point, then the person with the disability has to pay for it.
Well, they'll pay for part of it. They also, and that's always, you know, so if you allow them to do it and they put in grab rails in the bathroom, for example, they don't need to remove those.
That's wonderful.
So,
yep, that's wonderful. And that's reasonable because that helps.
Right. And it adds to the value of your apartment because you already have grab rails already installed.
Yeah. If people are smart,
it is.
And watching out for themselves.
Especially as we're an aging population.
Right. Indeed. Unfortunately, Keith, that's all we have time for.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I'll tell you, it goes very quickly, especially when you're giving out all such good information, which we really appreciate. Could you give us that contact information one more time?
Sure. So there are multiple ways you can get to us. You can call us. Our main line is 410-767-8600. You can, there's also a toll-free number for people outside the area. It's 1-800-637-6247. You can email us at mccr@maryland.gov. You can access us through our website, www.mccrmaryland.gov. Facebook, Maryland Civil Rights, Twitter, Maryland Civil Rights, it's Maryland Civil Rights. So we have multiple ways to get hold of us.
Amen. Thank you so much, Keith.
Thank you too, Bill.
And for Living in Baltimore, that's all we have time for today. I want to thank our guest, Mr. Keith Murky, who is Education and Outreach Associate with the Maryland Commission on Civil Rights, for being our guest today.
Thank you, Bill.
Keith.
Appreciate it.
Keep up your good work for all of us.
Thank you.
And for Living in Baltimore, I want to thank you for tuning in. Let's try to be a good neighbor out there in all of our neighborhoods, and we'll see you next time.